cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
You are listening to daily episodes of the cycling podcast Femina from OVO Energy Women's Tour, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time, this is our time. Today we are in Worcester.
Hello, my name's Rose Manley. I'm with, with Richard Moore. Same
Hi,
initials.
I can't do a Scottish accent, I'm afraid.
No.
Which is a shame to my ancestors.
I'll try one.
And Orla Shinnaway.
That was my Scottish accent.
Hello. What was that?
I said, I'll try a Scottish accent.
I think penultimate day, are we getting a bit D-mob happy? I mean,
does it feel like... Doesn't it? It sounds like it, like that.
It does sound like that. Stage four today of the OVO Energy Women's Tour. And, you know, on paper, it looks like another sort of big group sprint, but an awful lot happened today, and it was quite interesting, and there was a bit of controversy as well, and we'll hear from that a bit later on. We've got a very innovative feature in tonight's podcast as well, don't we?
Yes.
Ladies.
Mm-hmm.
How do we bill this?
Oh, that was a good little tease.
How do we trail this one?
Well, it's a very interesting, you called it a little feature, I call it a wee feature.
It's a twist on the water feature that
we had
last year.
We're making it sound quite salacious.
It's interesting.
It's very interesting, and it's actually come about because of people chatting to us about it.
Don't give too much away at this stage, Orla.
I'm not going to.
We need to keep people listening.
Yeah. But it's a subject that's been brought up as a topic of interest among female peloton at the minute, and it certainly piqued our attention, and so we thought we would go and investigate.
Oh, wonderful. Well, listen, before we hear your news roundup, we did ask listeners earlier in the week for little factoids about the places that we're visiting on the women's tour. Somebody called Andy emailed us in, and in fact, he came and introduced himself this morning as a friend of the podcast in Evesham. And rather than me read out the email that he sent in, I thought I'd just get him to tell us his local factoids. So here is Andy in Evesham.
My name's Andy, friend of the podcast from Evesham in Worcestershire.
And what's the story behind the hill?
We've got Breeden Hill just here, and early on in the stage, the peloton were making their way around the west side of it. Good place to get away in a breakaway, I'd say. But Breeden Hill's great for kind of anti-xenophobic behaviour, because Bray in Old Celtic was hill, Dune in Anglo-Saxon was hill, and then obviously hill. So hill is actually what Breeden Hill is called in the words of the three different civilizations that have meandered through this place over the last 1,000 years or so. And that's my son trying to...
Your son's interrupting. What have you got to say?
I just got to say that I told my dad to do this because I'm holding.
So it was Andy telling us about the hill, Orla. Mm. Without further ado, and that is nothing to do with Shakespeare.
We've got no hidden titles today. We couldn't think of anyone. Yeah. We are finally in the land of Elgar. Got here at last. We have been listening to a lot of Elgar today, actually, Pomp and Circumstance, Nimrod. But I didn't really think his works were necessarily well
Pomp,
enough known
who is
across.
Circumstance, and who is Nimrod here?
Well, that's a good question.
Famous writers from this area. Jonathan Coe, I believe, is from this neck of the woods, the novelist who wrote... there's a very tenuous link here, and I'm not sure if I'm going to go here.
You're going to have to now.
It's not really a link, but the other day when I was thinking about this race and how we cover it, it put me in mind of a book. Yeah, B.S. Johnson was an experimental novelist. He wrote a book called The Unfortunates, and it was just loose pages in a box. He read it in whatever order he wanted to read it. And it reminded me a bit of covering this race. It's kind of like you pick out pages, you speak to writers, and you piece together. And sometimes it's in the wrong order, and, you know, it's quite an experimental way of covering the race.
Who are the unfortunates in that situation? Us?
Well, yeah.
Or the listeners.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that that's how I do
anyway,
my news roundup.
Yes,
actually just pick events and throw them in any old order.
The link is Jonathan Coe, who's from here, wrote a very good biography of B.S. Johnson. I got there in the end.
Oh, my God. I can't even remember how it started.
Called Like a Fiery Elephant. Oh, speaking of which, Orla, please Give us your news roundup.
Right, well, a cloudy will start in Evesham this morning for the 131.5 kilometre ride to Worcester. We had drama right from the very start, a crash very early on. A large number of riders were caught up in that, with five abandoning. And that took up all of the medical staff involved in the race. So the race had to be neutralised for a bit until they could get the medical car back onto the convoy. Just before the neutralisation, the one rider had gone on a break and her lead resumed once the race got back underway again. And that was Charlotte Becker, the German high-tech product rider. You may remember she was the somewhat surprising breakaway winner of the Tour of Chongming Island last month. She went on an early break in that race and ended up winning the whole race. Well, today, by 36 kilometres, she had built up a lead of 2 minutes and 45. So she took the first points and the time gaps of the intermediate sprint, with Corin Rivera once again leading the rest of the peloton across the line. And Eugenia Bujak of BTC Ljubljana, who started the day in 8th, she finished 3rd. So still out in front was Charlotte Becker by the first Queen of the Mountains at Snows Hill, 41 kilometres, taking the points ahead of the current Queen of the Mountains Black jersey wearer Elisa Longo-Borghini, Rivera's Sunweb teammate Ellen van Dijk in 3rd, with Nivea Doma, Mariana Vos, Bols Dolmans, Amy Peters, Corin Rivera and Danny Rowe each taking their share of the points and time bonuses. Now, in the meantime, the peloton had been splitting behind that, with the main bunch now some 50 or so riders deep. From there, two attacked, trying to bridge the gap to Becker, and they were Cicely Uttrup-Ludwig of Cervelo Bigla, who we spoke to on the podcast last night, and last year's Queen of the Mountains, Wiggle High Fives, Audrey Cordon-Ragot. The two chasers made it across and increased the gap to almost 3 minutes at one stage, but the peloton started to react to that danger. It started bringing that gap back to under 2 minutes, but the break didn't prove that easy to pull back. It increased once again, so a little bit of yo-yoing between the breakaway and the bunch. The second Queen of the Mountains was shared among the breakaway first off, though. Audrey Cordon-Ragot came in first, Charlotte Becker second, and Uttrup-Ludwig third, with Leah Kirchman finishing fourth. The final sprint of the day at Inkbarrow came at 92 kilometres, so that was 40 kilometres from the end, and once again shared among the breakaway. Uttrup-Ludwig first this time, Cordon-Ragot second, and Charlotte Becker in third. Now, Sunweb did a lot of the hard work from there on in bringing back the break and protecting the green jersey of Corin Rivera. They eventually did that with 6 kilometres to go. That's when the break was caught, so they were in very close to being able to hold it out for the entire day. And there was discord among that trio as to whose fault it was that the break didn't stay away. We'll hear about that very shortly. The race then really intensified, though. Just a few spots of rain started to fall as the break was caught. You don't want wet roads in the run-up to a bunch sprint. It doesn't sound like that caused the big crash in the last 2.5 kilometres, but a big crash there was. A touch of wheels, it seemed to have been, in the usual fight for position. That was the problem. And Danny Rowe was one of the big casualties of that fall. We'll hear from her shortly. Hannah Barnes, I think, got caught up in that as well, just behind it, although I'm not sure that she came off. Certainly held up in it, though. The sprint for the line continued out front, however, and it was Bols Dolmans' former world champion Amelie Didriksen who crossed the line for first. I don't think we've said, actually, who won the stage today. There we go. That was a big build-up. It was Amelie Didriksen. That was Bols' first stage win of the race, and it was Didriksen's first individual win since the Ronde van Drenthe in March last year. I didn't realise it had been that long. Second was Lotto Lapisto of Cervelo Bigla, her second place there, matching her best finish of the season so far. And Mariana Vos was third for Wowdales. Chloe Hosking, incidentally, of Ali Cipollini, finished fourth, which is her highest finish of the race this year. So no change in the order then of the top six. Corin Rivera keeps the leader's jersey going into the final stage. Her lead is now cut ever so slightly, though, to 14 seconds. That's down from 16 yesterday. Mariana Vos in second. Danny Rowe is still third, but a rare day of not very many time bonuses for her means that she is 22 seconds off the lead now. Amy Peters and Christine Madras are at 25 seconds. Eugenia Bujak and Eva Berman swap places once again. Bujak is now 7th on 30 seconds. Berman is 8th on 31. And then everyone from 8th position right down to 15th shares that time gap, including Pauline Ferrand-Prevot for Canyon-SRAM and Rivera's teammate Ellen Van Dijk. Corinne Rivera stays in the points jersey. Danny Rose stays in the best British rider jersey. And Alisa Longo-Borghini looks like she has a very tight grip on the Queen of the Mountains jersey ahead of the final stage.
Well, today's stage was dedicated to the memory of Sharon Laws, the former rider, former Queen of the Mountains here in 2014, who tragically died from cervical cancer last December, aged just 43. Her good friend and teammate, Emma Pooley, was at the start today just to go along and pay her respects. Sharon Laws' mother was there as well. We grabbed a quick word with Emma Pooley just to find out from someone who knew her well what Sharon Laws was like.
Well, Sharon was extraordinary, I think it's fair to say. She started cycling fairly late. She was into sport before, but she did her first road race in 2008, I think, in January. And by August, she was at the Olympic Games for Great Britain. And that was her physical outlier capabilities. I mean, she was an amazing rider. And she started racing in late 30s. And, you know, she became a full professional. And she was feared on the mountains, I would say, and a very strong rider. But there was also her character, which was just she was just very special. She was just interesting, and she'd had a very different life before cycling, and she was a very warm, caring person who did a lot of things for other people, I think. And she gave me a different kind of perspective on cycling, and I think I'd still aspire to be more like her. She was a bit more adventurous than me, and sort of saw things maybe from a bigger picture of sport as a whole. And we had, the other thing about her was she was always, always busy. She was always dashing around. Either if she wasn't training, she was doing some other kind of exercise or making coffee or, you know. And we had a team mechanic who used to call her the hummingbird, because she was always sort of fluttering around, and she was tiny and sort of brightly coloured and sort of fluttered around like a hummingbird. So I think that's the way I kind of remember her. And I know that everyone who knew her in cycling and outside cycling really, really misses her, and always will.
So that was Emma Pooley remembering her friend Sharon Laws, and a lot of the riders in the race would certainly have remembered her and raced with her and remember her very well. So that was a sad note to today's stage. She lived in this area. But the stage, as you said, was won by Amelie de Derrickson. It was a big group that came into the finish in the end, and it had looked earlier on as if, you know, there might be something on the cards with Cecilie Uttrup Ludwig up the road. As you said, Orla, we heard from her last night, and she did say that she was looking forward to tomorrow in particular, but she was quite well placed overall. But, you know, it was kind of as you were, you know, big group finish, you know, a good sprinter winning the stage. So not a lot happened overall, and we all looked towards tomorrow for a proper shake-up. And Orla, you mentioned that Bulls Dolmans have been without a win up till now. You spoke, I think, Rose, to her teammate, the world champion Chantal Black, at the finish.
Yeah, I did. I mean, Chantal was really pleased for Amelie, and really pleased, I think, for the whole team to have finally got a win. But it wasn't as straightforward lead out as they expected.
There was a crash at 3k to go, I believe. I don't know how far back in the pack that was, though.
Yeah, it was not so far. I think place 30 or something. I heard it behind us, and we are unlucky. We had one girl in the crash that was Anna, but she was okay. I saw her after the finish, but it's never nice to have a crash in a lead out.
And is it a good feeling finally to get a bit of reward for your hard work? Kind of, Bowles Dolmans have been so aggressive this week and not really got much to show for it. Is it that a good relief?
Yeah, we do every day our best, and we don't have you cannot do anything about it. It's also the style of racing. There are many sprinters here, and after the climb everyone came back, and then Sunweb is controlling it, and you can attack, but it makes no sense at all.
So a good day for Bulls Dolmans, not such a good day for Wildings, which you might not really appreciate by just looking at the GC or the stage results, because you still have Mariana up there in second and you still have Danny in third. However, they went into today, I think, really hoping to and expecting to put the pressure on Sunweb an awful lot and maybe tire them out a little bit to put them in a better position for either Mariana or Danny on the final stage. And they had a bit of a disaster in the last 3 kilometres with Danny Rowe coming off. And it, I think it really changes things up for tomorrow, if indeed Danny can get to the start line, because it now seems like she is going to have to limit her losses as much as anything else. She says she'll be taking it kilometre by kilometre. When she fell off, I saw her come back to her parents and her husband, and she was livid with herself. She was, well, with herself, with the situation. She was so frustrated. She was so annoyed. She's been in such good form. And we know that she's really looking forward to tomorrow. She lives in Wales. She's an honorary Welsh girl. And she's doing so well in this race. And so I think her thinking was that she'd thrown it all away. She has been checked out. After I spoke to her, she said that the doctors couldn't rule out any fractures. And she could go to hospital to be scanned for fractures, but she didn't want to. She didn't want to know. She said if she feels okay, she will take to the start line. She says, if I can pedal, I will race. So the frustration very quickly changed to determination, but she is gutted nonetheless. But let's have a little listen to Danny and what she said about her crash and the stage other than that.
Danny, that looks incredibly painful. Good to see at least you can spin the legs, though. How does it feel?
Yeah, I'm in quite a lot of pain at the moment. I crashed with thankfully it was under 3 kilometres to go, so that's the only positive I can take out of it. But yeah, I took a massive whack to my knee on, it must have been the curb, it all happened so quickly. It was, yeah, hectic final. I was trying to get to the front to help Marianne when I crashed, but yeah, I really hope I can start tomorrow. That's what I'm just going to do, everything I can to try and start tomorrow and get through it.
So had you been leading Marianne out at that stage, preparing to lead her out at that stage?
Yeah, I was just trying to get to the front. I was in pretty good position, actually. I was quite close to the front on the right-hand side of the road. And I think, yeah, it's just like a squeezing of wheels, touch of wheels. And then, yeah, just the next thing I knew, I was on the floor.
How was the day other than that? Because there was a strong break and Sunweb seemed to have to do a lot of the work, which I guess maybe worked in your favour ever so slightly.
Yeah, it was actually perfect for us, to be honest, because they had a really hard day again. I was thinking, yeah, for tomorrow, it's the last chance to try and split it up again. Went hard up Snow Hill, but yeah, it just wasn't sort of long enough, hard enough and close enough to the finish for it to really make an impact on the race. But yeah, it was perfect having them up there, because then they obviously took the intermediate seconds, which so I didn't have to fight really for that, which was nice to kind of keep that GC kind of protected. And then, yeah, everything was fine until I hit the deck. But actually, now I'm pedaling, it's feeling okay. So, well, not worse anyway. So I'm a bit more hopeful now. When I first came down, I thought, oh, that's it, my race is over. But yeah, it's okay.
So what will tonight involve then in terms of trying to get yourself in a position to race tomorrow and make sure that you know whether you are or not?
Yeah, ice on my knee, painkillers, try and keep it moving, and then wake up and see how it is, and probably, yeah, do this turbo in the morning just to try and ease it before I start. Racing's obviously a different, yeah, different to just spinning my legs on the turbo, but yeah, I'll do everything I can to get through it.
How much would it mean to you to be able to race within sight of the podium tomorrow in Wales?
Oh, yeah, incredible. It will be so nice. Yeah, I'd love that.
Best of luck with it, Danny. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Juliette Elliott. I'm a cyclist. I race all kinds of bikes, mountain bike marathons, fixed gear crits, road races, BMX, a bit of downhill enduro too. I write about bikes, so I'm a journalist, I'm a blogger, a video maker, I'm a British cycling coach and a mountain bike guide. I support Skoda's campaign to close the gender gap in cycling. This is our time. Mainly what I feel when I ride a bike is happy, because I love being outside and I love powering my way through the countryside. And, you know, I live somewhere really pretty, so I like exploring my surroundings. I like speed as well. That's what I really, really like. I just love going fast.
Thank you very much to Skoda for... I'm getting less confident.
No, there was a bit of a hybrid there.
I hedged my bets. I hedged my bets there. I'm waiting for them to get in touch and offer me some voiceover work.
Tell you off, more like.
But thank you to Skoda for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. And I think we all wish them good luck with their campaign that they've just launched as well to strive for gender equality in cycling. They are certainly supporting the women's tour, not only us, but sponsoring the race as well. We heard before the break there from Danny Rowe. She put an appeal on Twitter, actually, after the stage for an ice compression machine. Is that right? Yeah, an ice compression machine. Is that right? You're looking at me like I'm saying something wrong, Rose.
It's just, again, every time that you say something without confidence, Richard, I find it surprising.
Unnerving.
Yeah, it is unnerving.
It's destabilising.
Normally everything is, buffalo. Oh. And then
when you look to others for reassurance, then we're not quite sure what to do with
scared.
That.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll not do that again. Reaching out for a game-ready ice compression machine in the Telford area that she's looking to borrow one to start tomorrow. So hopefully that appeal has been answered. I think you had something else to add about Danny.
Yeah, well, it's such
Rose.
A shame that happened at the end, because she looked... I was on the Snows Hill, which is actually the first Category 1 climb that we've had in the race so far.
That was after Hill, Hill, Hill.
Yeah, after Hill, 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 and it came really early. And she was looking... And actually, her mum and her dad were standing all dressed up in the WOW Deals jerseys with bidons, handing them out on the climb. And she looked... Danny was right at the front, and she looked so aggressive. She looked like she was really, really going for it. So she looked like she was in such good form, and it's such a shame to have put her...
She's been in the form of her life, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And she's been running with real confidence. So that it's a real shame for the race tomorrow if she's not able to ride and be at her best.
It's funny how quickly her attitude seemed to turn around from arriving back at the team bus, though. It seemed that she was completely dejected to begin with, and she really needed assistance to get her leg over the bike. And in fact, because half of her shorts were essentially ripped off, her bum cheeks hanging out, so she tried to get one leg over and then thought, that's a little bit indecent, and tried the other way instead, bless her. But she needed help to get her foot actually clipped into the pedal. And so she was saying, this isn't good. If I can't even clip in, there's no way I can ride. But then she started to pedal. And she said, actually, with every stroke, I'm starting to feel a little bit stronger. But yeah, it depends on just how competitive she can be, because tomorrow is going to be a brutal day anyway, especially with two of them in contention, three in the top 15 in her team. So she knows that it's going to be a hard day, but she's just going to try to ride it anyway if she can.
You mentioned the climb that you were on, Rose, and I think it was over the top of that climb that Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig and Audrey Cordon-Rigaud went after Charlotte Becker. And that looked initially quite a surprising move. She was well ahead, but they bridged across fairly easily, and that made three in the front. And the interesting thing was that that Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig was there, because she's a real sort of kind of outside threat. She's a great climber and will be strong tomorrow, and was 20 seconds or so down overall. So she was a real danger. Now, I spoke to Audrey Cordon-Rigaud at the finish, and what she said was quite interesting. Here she is, the Wiggle High Five rider.
Yeah, it was the perfect situation for the team, and really we pulled so hard up the front. It was a real TTT with the two girls, and... yeah, the deal was helping Cecilia to do the sprint qualification, and then, okay, she could help us a bit more and then drop, because we knew if she was staying with us, it was over. And when she did the bonification, then the DS decided not to drop, so she stayed with us and it was over, and I knew that. And I played my card attacking, but she was also catching me, and... Yeah, in the end, the tank was
so that,
empty.
We were wondering about that. So you were attacking each other. With her there, you had no chance of staying clear. They were chasing quite hard behind.
Yeah, of course. She was dangerous for the GC, and they had no chance to not... There was no chance that they would not chase her. So I knew that from the beginning, but having her was a danger. Maybe I should have waited from the beginning, or I don't know. But also for the team, was good to have me up the front. They had nothing to do behind, and it's shit that they missed the sprint with Kirsten. But it's cycling, you know. Sometimes you believe in the world, and you're a straight person, and you're dealing with person who are not the same way as you.
So tell me, but what point did you two get clear to jump across to Becker?
What do you mean?
Well, when in the race did you go across?
Oh, at the top of the first QM, actually.
So just over the top.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was the perfect, really perfect moment, perfect situation. And yeah, he just didn't.
And when you saw who you were with, were you in two minds about whether to commit to that, or did you just think this is an opportunity, let's go for it?
Yeah, the plan was clear that we needed to take the breakaway to make Kirsten easy in the bunch. And as long as people with you are not dangerous at the GC, it's going. But yeah, we had Cecilia in the middle, and poor, I mean, she had a try as well, and it's good, but for us was shit.
You thought she was going to drop back after the sprint?
It was the deal.
So I'm obviously a little bit slow in the uptake there, and I sort of worked out exactly what she was saying as we were speaking. But she clearly said to Cecilia, because she wanted to get across to the break and be in the front, but having her with her was obviously a problem, because they weren't going to let them go all the way to the finish. Cecilia would have taken over the leader's jersey. So she made a deal with her that she could go for the bonus sprint, get a few seconds in the bank, and then go back to the peloton. That was a deal that Audrey Cordon-Rigaud says that Cecilia agreed to, and then reneged on it and remained in the break. And when we heard towards the end they were attacking each other, that seemed an odd thing to be doing, but that's obviously why. So she wasn't very happy.
No, it's such I love all that politics of the peloton stuff, because it's something that you don't normally get to hear about it, but it'd be interesting to see what Cecily's side of the argument was, because you're right. I mean, Cecily being up there was no way that was going to go to the finish, and actually this was a stage where a breakaway definitely could have gone, and instead of having a breakaway, we just had a bunch sprint.
They did manage to increase the lead, though, the gap, to almost 3 minutes after that intermediate sprint. So if they had worked together, then who knows? Obviously, the power of a chasing pack is very difficult to withstand. But if they had continued to work together, and they're all the ifs and the buts, but they didn't, and that's the thing, in the last 10 kilometres when they were being chased down, that's when Cecily went off the front, that's when Audrey went off the front, and they tried to weaken each other, and then it's always going to fall apart at that stage.
Yeah, and Audrey did say they were riding really hard together, so, you know, there were obviously moments when she was fully committed to it. It's a difficult situation because, you know, you can't really blame Utrip Ludwig for not sticking with it.
Of course you can.
Once she's made that effort to get across.
And if you've got the legs and you feel like this could be your day, what rider in their right mind would say, well, yeah, but we made a deal, so I've got my points now, I'll just go back to the pack? Of course you wouldn't. So maybe is that naivety on the part of Audrey? I'm not quite sure.
But also, I mean, Cecily is in the position where, yeah, she's not far off on GC, but so is a lot of people. I mean, there's between second place and 15th place, there's 17 seconds between all of those riders. So being, like, you know, supposedly up there on GC, you'd have to still be that much better than a lot of other riders. So why not have a bit of glory yourself?
Absolutely.
Behind Sunweb, we're pretty much on the front the whole day. And we were talking earlier, weren't we, about how women's racing has changed and developed over the 5 or 6 years of this race, where, you know, now teams like that one are strong enough, and there are several of them in the race who can really sit in the front and control it, and they're a very strong team where they could just keep them just where they wanted them and just gradually bring it back, which is what they did. But another hard day for them, no doubt. You spoke to Scotland's Flirty Mackay at the finish, I think, Orla, didn't you?
I did speak to Flirty Mackay. What's interesting, though, as well, is that we have had a team or two that's been able to do that hard work for the last year or so. Mostly one of those teams has been Bols Dolmans, and they haven't been doing that this race, and we've still seen the kind of control that makes the racing a little bit more exciting. And dare I say that actually, because teams weren't necessarily looking to Bols Dolmans today, that allowed them to almost surprise us with a stage win. For once, they were not having to shoulder the responsibility of the chase, but that was down to Team Sunweb, and that is something that I asked Mariana Voss about this morning. She said that she wanted Sunweb to do the chase, and so I asked Flirty Mackay, and she said, yep, we did the chasing, but hey, we were more than happy to do it, and we all feel fresh for tomorrow. It looked like a fairly brutal day for Sunweb out there trying to control the pace. What was it like?
It was a hard day, yeah. The three went on top of the first QRM, and first it was fine, but then when the gap grew too fast, we needed to control it a bit, and on a parcours like this, it's really hard to do. But in the end, we're still in the lead and one day to go.
Were the other teams looking to you guys to control it? Was anyone else doing their share of the work as well, or was it all down to Sunweb?
In first case, it was all up to us, but then in the last 30K, when the sprinters team are going to believe in a sprint. They joined a bit, so then we got some help, luckily.
Were you able to control the energy reserves, though, for tomorrow? You didn't have to dig too deep to be able to bring that break back?
Sorry?
Were you okay in terms of not having to dig too deep to bring the break back, given that you had to do all the work in the front today?
It was still hard, so good recovery, good night of sleep, so, and then we will fight tomorrow again.
Do you know anything about the crashes? I believe there was a crash in the neutralized zone and then another one with 3 kilometers to go. Did you see any of those?
Yeah, I was every time just behind, and it's always really bad to see this happening. And actually, you need to keep. Yeah, you need to start over again because it's really bad to see something like this. But I don't know, and I don't know how the girls are. Luckily, we stayed safe, so hopefully the other girls are okay.
So you must be feeling fairly confident going into the final stage, are you?
Yeah. Tomorrow, hardest day. So Queen State, so we have a really strong team. We show it every day, so there's going to be a big fight tomorrow.
Best of luck with it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. And a reminder, you can get 30% off all your Science and Sport products, including discounted ones, for this week only, while the Women's Tour is on. So until tomorrow, tomorrow's the last day of this offer, with the code WOMENSTOUR30, WOMENSTOUR30, at the checkout, scienceandsport.com. And we were supposed to last night put some questions on fueling to the riders from Canyon SRAM. Unfortunately, this didn't happen due to circumstances outside our control. We were too late.
Mm.
We were too late, and we were held up yesterday. I don't know why, but we were held up, and we got
it
to the hotel.
Ended up being a long day. Really,
we got to the hotel very late, and it was just too late to do it.
It's
so
the danger of being of recording in a pub, which we've avoided. Today.
We only had the one drink each, though, didn't
we?
You
we
two
were
very
behaved.
Good.
We are going to rearrange that. We've got the questions. We've got quite a lot of questions.
Not the drinking.
No. We're gonna rearrange it. I spoke to Kenny Shram today. We're gonna set that up soon. So we will do that, and we'll play. We wouldn't have had room space to play the answers in these episodes anyway. So we'll save them up for the monthly podcast Femina episodes. Although who knows, on the back of this, perhaps the cycling podcast Femina will become a daily show.
Perhaps we'll need
maybe
a
for the rest of our lives.
Maybe we'll just keep going. Yeah. Hey, what are you up to Monday? There's got to be something to talk about.
Let's just chat racing, shall we? Who
let's
cares?
Do it.
If nobody's listening.
No, or, yeah,
talk
we could.
About.
Or change into a cultural one. I mean, Orla, you've that's. You
well,
know.
Yeah, I've laid a strong marker for that, haven't I? Set the bar high.
Yeah.
You just have to think of lots of things about Beckenham and Tooting.
Yeah.
lots to say.
Lots to say.
Listen, we've got to introduce tonight's feature. Now, this is. Well, how do I introduce this one? Well, maybe I get one of you to introduce this.
I was going
to
say, science and sport, you know, what you put in your body must come out your body at some point.
Nice one, Rose. That was good. Let's hear it now.
Mariana Voss, Wildales. Ask you a very quick question about a feature that we're doing on the cycling podcast, and it's about nature breaks in the female peloton, because it seems to be that in the last couple of years it's become more of an established protocol really for the women to stop at certain times. Have you noticed that, or what's the procedure out in the road?
Yeah, that's changed, and that's because of the distance. The stages got longer, but yeah, in a stage race, yeah, you have to of course hydrate, and then yeah, it happens that you have to stop. And in the past they were a little shocked, but now not anymore, and they have a break as well.
So was it quite a shock to begin with then for those following and not realizing that it was about to happen, and it had become a thing, if you like?
Yeah, there was one time I remember in the past I was in the side of the road and I had my bike there leaning against a tree, and then mechanics came out with wheels and they was like, sorry, I'm here. So yeah, they turned around and went back. But yeah, that's not happening anymore.
Tim Harris, who drives the Chief Commissar. Tim, you're driving the Chief Commissar. You're right behind the race. You've got the best view of the race. But you've spotted a new phenomenon, a new thing that's happening in women's racing.
Yes, now that the stages are a bit longer than they used to be, I think, there is quite a lot of, how should we say it, natural breaks. That's the polite way of putting it, yeah.
There are practical issues with that, obviously, with women. Do you think it is just the longer distances that's led to that?
I don't know if it's longer distances or they drink in a lot or whatever, but it's a lot more complicated if you're a woman than if you're a man.
Erwin Kistemaker, Chief Commissar at the Oval Energy Women's Tour.
Yeah, last year I was in the tour of Italy for women, and then all of a sudden the lady stopped, and I was surprised. I never saw this before, and in this race it started for me that I saw this, and now it's normal, it's regular, everybody stops when they have to pee.
And in men's and women's races, obviously there are rules about where you're allowed to stop and whether it's appropriate. I guess that applies to the women's racing as well.
Yeah, of course, but you see women, till now, women don't stop where people are standing, so that's good in my opinion.
So there haven't been any fines issued yet?
Not yet.
Annette Edmondson, Wiggle High Five. Okay, Letty, some of the people in the race might have noticed a bit of a new trend in racing. A lot of bare bottoms on the side of the road.
Well, I feel like the women's tour is quite a popular tour, and so there are a lot of people around, so this is why it is actually quite hard to stop for a nature break. The boys have got it a bit easier. They can actually do it on the bike if they want, but the girls, not so much. So most of the time, there's a bit of a chat around amongst the group, and then especially when the pace eases off, and then when you get a group of maybe three or four that want to go to the toilet, you all stop together. Generally, you have to take everything off, and then go as fast as you can, jump back on, and then use the four of you to try and get back onto the group. But there's also another way to do it. Some people are able to actually put their hand up the side of their nicks and pull it over, and they can skillfully do that. I have not mastered that technique, so I'm not going to try again, shall we say.
Are people taking more nature breaks now that the routes are longer, the stages are longer?
Definitely. I hadn't thought about that. But the stages are now increased from 135 to 160 now, so it's a long time to spend on the bike, and yeah, especially in a tour where the pace does sometimes ease off. If you've got to go, you've got to go. So yeah, why not do it in a group?
Is that something that someone should have come up with a solution for to make it easier or quicker, instead of taking all of your kit off?
Yeah, some teams actually have got clothing where you can do that, so that they might find like a magnet on the back of the nicks, and so you're able to pull them down faster. I know DHB also came up with some bibs where they go around the neck, so it's a bit of a halter neck, so that does make that a lot more efficient. But sometimes you can also find trouble with them coming down a bit, or like not feeling as tight as others, especially on a longer race. So yeah, some people are trying to work on that, but I'm sure they'll get bigger and better the more and more we need to do it.
And do you think it does waste a lot of time, actually, or do you think women might dehydrate themselves a little bit more because it's more difficult to stop somewhere?
I guess, yeah. So, like, that did go through my head the other day. I was like, oh, I haven't actually drunk any water this morning. I'm like, oh, well, at least I won't have to go to the toilet. But that's not the way to do it, especially when it is 160Ks and you've got day after day. So, yeah, it's all about health, and you need to keep the hydration up. So, yeah, we're going to have to find some other solutions, and we're going to have to be confident and, just going to have to commit.
Have you ever been caught somewhere embarrassing where you've had to take a stop?
I think I had to do it in China once, and it was on a major highway that the road just kept going and going and going and going, and we had to stop. And so when it's just cement and cement walls, there's nowhere to hide. So you've just got to kind of just turn your back and hope the convoy doesn't feel like gazing out the window at that moment.
Kim Palmer, DS, Wiggle High Five. Okay, Kim, so we just spoke to Nettie about the difficulties of being a rider and needing a wee. But what are the difficulties of being a DS and stuck in the car all day?
Yeah, well, that can become a challenge, particularly for women in the car on, you know, four hours, 160Ks. Can't have coffee in the morning before the usual coffee. And, we just have to find an appropriate time to get out and pee, because sometimes it takes a little bit longer for the females than the males. So, yeah, and I suppose there's a little bit of embarrassment around it as well. So, dropping your dacks or, like, in full clothes on the side of the road. But, yeah, sometimes it has to be done. So, yeah, it's all good.
And you were saying that when you were racing that people stopped a lot less.
Yeah, they did. We still had like similar distances in certain races, but yeah, it just wasn't, this is going back 15, 20 years ago, it just, yeah, it wasn't the thing, you know, or we'd get the whole, you know, peloton to stop and go to the toilets. So yeah, and so we would be always sort of minimising the amount that we were drinking and that sort of thing. And I mean, now for me, it's the same in the car. It's just like, oh, I sort of think, okay, how many hours is the race? Like, and strategically work out how much I can drink beforehand. And yeah, there's a lot of dehydration going on in the car, so all good.
And why do you think that's changed in the peloton, that people are happier to stop? Is it better is there kind of stronger voices in the peloton, so everyone to say, you know, everyone stop now? Or do you think people have realised that being hydrated is more important than the embarrassment? Or
yeah, I feel that with education, yeah, the hydration is more important. And then if you're getting a few groups of people, you can stop and do a pee break. And these days too, you know, cars can bring you up. You've got the caravan that you can utilise and that sort of thing. Whereas back in our days, it's like, well, if you stopped, there was no car that would wait with you and whatever. And then there would be and normally girls would attack and that sort of thing, and you would never get back on. So yeah, it was always hesitant. Whereas I think you know, there's that sort of underlying, you know, culture, like if everyone's going to stop for a pee, yeah, we don't attack and that sort of thing, and let you have your nature break and on with it, we get back to racing. So yeah, it's all good.
Cachenivia Doma Canyon SRAM.
Well, other teams have told me that Canyon SRAM have their own way of doing it, and they thought it was some kind of innovation in the shorts, but actually it's a technique that you've come up with, Cash, is that right?
Actually, this technique I was taught by our teammate Aliona Milosic. Yeah, she knows this way, and before I was always racing with just one brace, so it was super easy to like stretch my whip shorts and make what I need to do. And yeah, this time I have this new way, and it's much easier and better, because then it's nicer to like leave my radio on the same position, and the cables are not like everywhere around my body, so it's easier and faster. So yeah.
Do you think it's something that needs to be addressed, because a lot of riders might lose a lot of time trying to find somewhere appropriate to drop their shorts?
Yeah, but you know, also the thing is, like, once everyone stops to make a pee, the pace in the peloton is pretty easy, so it's not that we are stopping 5Ks before the climb or when it's a bunch sprint, intermediate sprint.
And the technique, is it for speed or is it for embarrassment, or what is the benefit of it?
I think speed, or like also, yeah, usually speed, because you don't want to like stay in the bush for an entire day, so you just like, okay, I do my thing and then I'm back on the bike and don't waste the time.
So that was our water feature. A twist on the water feature from last year's Tour de France, and a fascinating subject.
I hope we haven't put people off. I hope we don't have a lot of Daniel Freebs out there. Yeah, people are still listening. But it is a really fascinating one. And it's one, if you think back to La Course last year even, when we were all in Marseille and we had the Olympic Velodrome, and none of the women's toilets were open and the women didn't have anywhere to go. And we actually see it at the race here as well, because some of the buses, the team buses, do have toilets and showers on board. Lots of them are small camper vans and they don't have that. And so a few days ago, we were in a park, and I noticed before the race, lots of the women were going off into the trees in their Lycra to have a little nature break before the race got underway, because it's easier than going to find a toilet. And it's also, it's to do with everyone on the race, all the women on the race. And it's just, I guess, it's this is, by the way, in no way a complaint. It's just the way it is. But it's much more difficult for women along the side of the road. So arguably, the riders actually have it slightly easier, because people now understand, or will understand very shortly, that, you know, they're pulling down their Lycra, they're part of the race. But if you're just a normal woman in normal clothes squatting beside the road, you know, and trying to do your business.
And you've got a bad track record of that, haven't you, Orla?
Oh, God. Oh, that was in the pitch black.
Yeah.
That was in pitch black. Yeah. That was at the Giro d'Italia. When I was in a bus full of male colleagues, so they all stopped by the side of the road to have a wee. There was nowhere for me to go, so I went running down, well away from the road, not realising I was running into this vineyard in mafiosa country. Next thing, I hear my knickers around my ankles, I hear gunshots going off, I am not kidding. One gunshot, I'm like, oh my God. Two gunshots, oh my God. Went sprinting back up to the road.
You pulled your pants up first.
Pulled my pants up, of course. Almost lost my mobile phone. But yeah, anyway, we managed to get back into the van and everything was fine. But, you know, even the other day, I'm in a team car and I'm in with two guys and the driver of the car, I was talking to him about this very issue and he said, yeah, it's very difficult for women. Anyway, Mikey, to the mechanic behind, anyway, Mikey, do you need a break yourself? Mikey says, no, I'm fine, thank you very much. He stops, pulls over, has a wee while I'm busting, and of course I don't get asked because there's nothing you can do about it if there's a woman in the car, and that's just the way it is. Thank you for bringing up that anecdote again.
I don't know how many times I've heard that. It never gets old. Never gets old.
Rose hasn't heard it.
I haven't.
There we go.
But it's amazing.
This is a common ritual in men's racing. It happens at every stage. Stages are obviously very long, but it's almost organised that they stop at a certain point. The race switches off. The men pull over and do their business. It's often the case that riders will also be fined for peeing in the wrong place, in inappropriate places. And this is, you know, something that the commissar who I spoke to, we heard from during the package there, Erwin Kistemacher, it's still quite new for, mm-hmm. for it to happen in women's racing, and I think there's still a lot of sensitivity around it and not, you know, not coming down too hard on women who are just
They're
answering
a
call of nature.
They're a bit shy about it, really, aren't they?
Well, yeah, but you know, it has to be managed as well. And I think you were speaking, Rose, to a male sports director who was saying that it does have to be probably managed. I don't know how it's managed on the open road, but
he thought that there would something had to be done about it because it's for so many reasons. I mean, for one thing, people lose a huge amount of time by just wanting to go for a quick wee. And for another reason, it becomes a bit dangerous because the women start not hydrating themselves as properly as they should be because they're worried they're going to have to stop multiple times.
Which in a stage race is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, he felt that something had to be done and had to be done soon. But his solution was more to have a place where it was designated, where they could have, you know, some kind of privacy to use and somewhere on every stage to be marked to do that.
I mean, I think that's a little bit funny that they need privacy. If the women themselves aren't demanding privacy, who are we to say that they need to hide?
But it's for the spectators, I guess, isn't it?
But then that's where it becomes a case of doing it somewhere with keeping in mind public decency. I think it would be very hypocritical, really, and a little bit over the top if women had to hide themselves away, whereas men can just do it by the side of the road.
Well, men get fined when they do it in a driveway or something.
But exactly,
and so
women should be the same, but men don't have to go and find themselves a toilet. I mean, the other thing, they just do it in nature, and I think women should have that same racing right, because otherwise then it just becomes a whole logistical element that you've got to think about on top of everything else in the race.
But it's also a clothing issue, isn't it? Because
it's more
men,
that than anything, really.
Yeah, it is, because the men can get away with it because you can't, you know, see too much, and the women can't, because a lot of them, there are some innovations actually, because I even have some bib shorts which have a big zip on them, so then you don't have to take your jersey off and then take your bibs down. But none of the riders seem to be wearing those. And there are some innovations that are like halter neck, bib shorts. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, you still need to be kind of full moon, don't you?
Yeah, and I think now that the stages are longer and longer, it is something that needs to be addressed more. But yeah, a zip would make the most sense, really. But then, it's where it's positioned on the saddle, obviously.
I mean, the issue is that zips don't stretch, so then they're not comfortable. So it's one of those things that I think probably manufacturers need to kind of get on board and try and find a solution, because it does affect the racing, and it does, I think it would also ultimately affect the riders' health.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our longtime headline sponsor at the cycling podcast Femina. We are presenting Pedalers de Charme t-shirts daily, and last night, in fact, we presented Leah Kirchman with her t-shirt. We were staying in the same hotel as Team Sunweb, so I ambushed her on her way to dinner and gave her the t-shirt. She posed with it, and she was very pleased. She's raising money for breast cancer care, as well as, you know, the races association with that charity. She's actually individually raising money. If you want to donate, then you'll see how to do that if you go to her Twitter feed. and Instagram as well. So congratulations to her. Today, who's our Pédaleuse de Charme? Today, our final Pédaleuse de Charme, in fact.
Oh, no.
Why not tomorrow?
Because how do we give them the T-shirt on Monday?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we could. We could have won for the race.
Yeah.
Get listeners can...
There we go.
And then we'll then retrospectively get a T-shirt to somebody. Who are we seeing today?
Well, this is something that we heard on the grapevine a bit last night, actually, just after we recorded yesterday's podcast. And the story concerns EJ Harris, who might be a rider that people aren't familiar with, but she rides for Story Racing Team. And we heard that yesterday, having ridden the longest stage on the Women's World Tour calendar that has been, she stopped and helped out. There was an accident on the motorway, I think.
A motorcyclist.
A motorcyclist. And she stopped to help as an army medic.
She saved a life on her way back from the race. How wonderful.
Wonderful. So I went and found her at the finish today. And here's what she had to say about that. So what happened yesterday?
We finished the stage and we were transferring back to the hotel and the road ahead of us was blocked, but we couldn't see any blue lights. So we figured out there'd been an accident and it had happened pretty imminently. So we headed up and there was a motorcyclist who'd come down after a collision with a car. Unfortunately, there was an A&E nurse on the scene. I'm an army doctor, so we did a bit of first aid at the scene waiting for the paramedics to arrive. And the next thing I know, my teammates, after a 150k race, are helping me do log rolls and speaking to his next of kin on the phone. But he was stable and fortunately, I'm sure he's okay. He got taken to a trauma hospital. But that was that. And then we carried on.
All in a day's work.
I know, just when you think your day's over, something catches you by surprise.
Wow, that's... I guess... have you had that kind of situation before where you have to, you're sort of called into action?
Yeah, I mean, I don't go looking for trouble, but if something happens like that, then I guess if you've got the skill set, you've got a duty of care to help someone, and any good person would, I'm sure you'd do the same if you're in a similar position.
And so. you haven't heard any more about what happened?
I know you went to UHCW Coventry Hospital, which is a trauma centre, but I could tell after doing a triage he was fairly stable, so I'm sure he's okay.
And otherwise, how is the race going for you? You look like you've had a tumble yourself.
Yeah, I came down in the first half of stage one, so I'm pretty much scarred over now. Other than that, I've stayed upright. The race is going really well, and the crowds in every single village, the streets are just lined, so it's brilliant, and as a team we're really enjoying the tour.
And you've got your Sarah's coming, I think, to the finish tomorrow, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She's coming to the finish. It'll be nice to see her and the kids. Yeah.
So all in a day's work for EJ Harris. Fantastic story, and I think she was underplaying slightly her role in that incident. I gather that she was with the motorcyclist for quite some time, and then obviously another tough stage today. Meanwhile, she's getting over her own crash on day one. So I'll go and find her tomorrow and present her with the Pédaleuse de Charme T-shirt. Any other business, folks? We've been talking a little bit today about the stage, obviously, and about Sunweb. It's all leading up to tomorrow and the hilly stage. It is a tough stage, and we're expecting and hoping for a lot from it.
We also you chatted as well to Kashyna Viadoma, didn't you? And her pink ribbon sender.
I did. Well, you spoke to her, Rose, this morning, Kashyna Viadoma.
Yes, I did.
About the racing, so we're going to hear this together because, you know, we've been very aware the last couple of days that although the race has come to the finish together, and on the face of it, if you just look at the results, it doesn't look like an awful lot has happened. When you actually see the race and speak to the riders, a lot is happening out there. And Kashyna Viadoma in particular, defending champion, has been incredibly aggressive. She's been attacking a lot, her trademark sort of attacking from the front. She goes and just launches a sustained attack from the front. She won Binda earlier this year with a similar move. She doesn't seem to jump people, she just tries to ride them off her wheel. She's looked good and she's looked impressive, but she just hasn't really had the terrain to make the difference. Elisa Longo Borghini's been another one who's been impressive. So we thought, well, I went and spoke to Barry Austin, their sports director this morning, just about what they could do. And he said that they would just keep trying. You know, they haven't had the reward yet from this race, but they'll keep giving it a go. And Kashyna Viadoma kind of said a similar thing to you, Rose. So we'll hear first from her talking about her tactics, how she's riding the race, how her team are still trying to win the race. And then we'll hear a little conversation at the end between her and Laura Hunter, who is the girl who wrote on her pink ribbon last year. She's a breast cancer survivor, and as well as writing on the pink ribbon that Kashi Navidoma wore last year, the two met and became good friends. Laura Hunter lives in this area, so she was at the stage today, and they were reunited at the finish. And I just grabbed a quick word with them to find out, you know, whether Laura's been following Kashi and how often they keep in touch, and whether her presence here might be the good luck charm that Navidoma needs.
Well, first about the racing, Kasia, we've seen Canyon SRAM and you particularly being very aggressive at the front and not quite getting the results perhaps that you're looking for. How's that been?
Personally for me, I came here to help my team, to bring a result or to like contribute to getting a great result with my teammates. And yeah, so far we were trying to attack and be aggressive all the time, but every single time or the climbs are too short or not steep enough to really make a huge gap. So after each climb, everyone gets together again and then we have to create a new scenario and I think what would be the best situation for us. But yeah, unfortunately all the time it comes to a bunch sprint and it's so nervous and hectic and somehow we kind of get lost and it's hard to really stay together. Especially after the all work that we've done during the stage. So we hope that particularly Sunday will be like hard enough to make some differences.
Do you think the other teams are not being as aggressive as Canyon SRAM might like as well?
I think that also Bulls is trying to be super aggressive because they, as well as we, don't have a really good result so far. So I think that, yeah, both of us trying to like create a situation that there will be like little breakaway and then we can like,
Kashia, Laura, we remember the friendship that you struck up last year. Have you kept in touch since then?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we've been like texting and making sometimes some voice messages, which is really nice and special to hear or to make. So yeah, I'm really grateful to have her in my life.
Laura, nice to see Kashia again today.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've missed her. It's so nice to see her and see her smile again. And
you've been following her career closely, watching her successes.
I have, yeah. I've kept in touch over the years and sending you messages of luck and love, yeah.
So. Sending me a lot of love and happiness and smile.
She brought you a lot of good luck last year as well. Do you think her appearance on the stage today might bring you good luck for tomorrow?
You know, it's something more than by graces for me right now. You know, she's a wonderful soul and I don't connect her with my sport because I connect her with my life, so.
I'll get Laura to say then. Do you think Kasia's going to win tomorrow?
I think she'll do very well. She'll do her best and that's all that matters, yeah. Yeah.
That was lovely and I'm touched by this race, really. I love the fact that every single rider wears their pink ribbon every day with the message written on it. Just to explain, whoever doesn't know, every rider has a message from a breast cancer survivor. And they all say that it makes a difference to them. Certainly watching them and seeing that collectivity of pink, a lot of them wear them in their hair, some of them have them on their bikes. It's just a lovely thing and it gives the race a sense of purpose. And I just really like that. I think it's a lovely touch, really. But I think we're going on to any other business now, are we? I think
any other business? Any other business?
Well, I wanted to mention asparagus.
We've eaten a lot of asparagus, haven't we?
We have eaten a lot of asparagus, and it makes me think of our water feature. Have you noticed anything? They say it makes your wee swell, doesn't it? Anyway, apparently,
they don't say it. It does.
It does, yeah. Well, you've eaten a lot of asparagus. I tried to eat asparagus on the first night, but myself and Richard and Tom Carey of The Telegraph all ordered asparagus. Richard went off to take a phone call and the lady came back and said, there's only one asparagus left. And so I said, I'll have the carrot soup. That's fine. I said, Richard will have the crab pate. I was given the asparagus to Tom. You came back. Who got the asparagus?
Hang on. Oh, yeah, but I didn't know. I was not there, so I didn't know any of this.
I told you were getting crab pate.
No, you made it sound like insisted that I take the
anyway,
asparagus.
So Richard's
I'd have preferred crab
more
patty.
What I found suspicious about the whole thing is that you two don't stop talking about asparagus. And I think someone from like the asparagus marketing board has got to you two.
Well, no, it's today.
And you're getting paid per mention.
It's today because in Evesham, we saw asparagus. Did you see him though?
This is probably...
This is a man dressed as an asparagus, and his name is Asparagus.
He was walking towards me. He was in a big asparagus outfit, and he was walking towards us. His face was exposed. And he's walking towards us, and I was just walking towards him with a poker face, and he looked at me and went, all right. It was very surreal.
Well, I saw him, and
I went, all right.
There was just an old lady who was just looking up at him, and she obviously caught me like giving him a double take, and she said, it only happens around here.
But apparently,
well,
it's the best asparagus.
Is famous, apparently, yeah. And their soil is very chalky. Is that right? Is that what they said or something? Their soil is conducive to wonderful asparagus. And so there's a pub near Evesham which has an asparagus festival every year at the start of asparagus season. And in hospitality earlier, we don't often get into hospitality, but we managed to get in for a little bite to eat. And they had a huge bowl of freshly warmed asparagus. And I have to say, it was about the nicest that I've ever had. And Lionel and Daniel would be disgusted with my lack of tasting notes, but it was fresh, it was crisp, it was woody, and it was lovely.
I know that we didn't put any like hidden references in this episode, but someone needs to tot up the number of asparagus mentions. If anyone can get that right, it's about around the 200 point. Then we should send you some asparagus, I guess, from Evesham.
And the only thing about Worcester, Worcester sauce or Worcestershire sauce?
Worcestershire.
Well, this is the funny thing. If any of our foreign listeners, as a non-English, well, non-English, I guess, because even in Ireland, I find it funny that it's called Worcester and not Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcester, yeah. It's Worcester sauce, isn't it? What do you call it?
Worcestershire.
I don't Worcestershire. What do you call it?
Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire sauce.
Liam
I call
Perrins.
It Worcester sauce.
Now, just to change the subject ever so slightly, Mike Waring has emailed us in with a literary connection to here. As you're making cultural connections to the landscape as you follow Women's Tour this week, I wanted to ensure that you referenced Inkborough. Is that the Inkborough?
Yeah, that's Inkborough is where the sprint was. The second intermediate sprint was. Yeah. It was
as an inspiration for the Archers. The Archers.
Oh.
The Old Bull pub is reported to be the basis of Ambridge's Bull. Just make sure you stop for a pint of Shars while you're watching the intermediate sprint there. Regards, Mike Waring.
Wow.
There you go. Thank you for that, Mike.
Anybody an Archers fan?
No.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting, though. Interesting. And also, apparently, Worcester is the home to the... We've just been told.
Yes.
The oldest pub in the world.
This is going to get... Twitter is going to go crazy over this about...
I think there are probably quite a few claims.
But
the oldest newspaper in the world apparently comes from Worcester, which I think is rather lovely and quite relevant.
Indeed. It's the Barrows of Worcester Journal. Is the
and
oldest
it's still
newspaper
going.
In the world, and
yeah.
it's still going.
We should pick up a copy.
Yeah, yeah. We're not in the oldest pub in the world. We're in the oldest Bills in Worcester. And we probably should wrap things up because we have to drive to Wales tonight. We've got a 2.5-hour drive. Looking forward to that. I mean, we've been looking forward to the stage. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be hard. And it will be decisive because
will
decide the outcome of the race.
And the bells are tolling.
The bells are
what
tolling.
What greater a sign do we need?
Great. Thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Rose.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, sorry. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Orla.
A cycling podcast, Femina, in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
You've been listening to the cycling podcast Femina at the Ovo Energy Women's Tour. Thanks to our sponsors Rafa, Skoda and Science and Sport. The music in this episode is by Glasspear and bensound.com. Thanks to them. This episode was produced by Jonathan Rowe.